You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com Podcast Network.
DolphinsTalk.com Point After.
Happy to be joined by a veteran sports journalist and broadcaster who works as an NFL insider for TSN, which has him covering both the NFL and the CFL across all TSN platforms. Happy to have Dave Naylor on the show. How are you?
Nice to be here, Josh.
So it is July, which means the NFL news is far and few between. So I wanted to kind of look back on some Dolphins players, and one that kind of comes to mind is perhaps the most important and best Dolphin of the last 10 years, and that's Cameron Wake. Dave, you covered the CFL and saw firsthand what Cam did during his two seasons with the BC Lions. So I hope today we can give Dolphins fans a little insight as to what those 2007-2008 seasons meant for Cam Wake and his development and what became a pretty good NFL career.
You know, he was tremendous. I mean, he was as impactful a defensive player as I've seen, and certainly had his contract allowed him to go to the NFL after year number one, I'm sure he would have. He had a three-year contract at that time with the BC Lions, where they would only let you out of your contract 1 year early, not two. So that's why he had to come back for a second season. I mean, he was a complete player. I remember somebody saying this to me, that they thought that of the 12 positions on the field in the CFL, that Cam Wake could probably line up at 10 of them. That the only ones he couldn't play were kind of inside half, but he could play the corner, he could play all three linebacker positions, he could play safety, and he could play anywhere along the defensive line. And I know we're maybe moving towards the era of the positionless defensive player, but this is, you know, back in those days, and that really spoke to how good he was. And how, I mean, getting into the backfield, he was as good as I've ever seen, you know. And I can remember a playoff game in Saskatchewan in his second year that he was just living in Saskatchewan's backfield. And it was funny. And, you know, I have I knew somebody in the Dolphins organization that I was staying in touch with about Cam Wake because I knew they were interested in him. And this person actually, on the morning of Cam Wake's workout, called me and said, "We just worked out Cam Wake, and oh my God." Right. And I said, "I told you." And he said, "Yeah, we weren't sure because we know some of the quality of the offensive linemen in the CFL can be, you know, not the high, especially once you get in season. Most, you know, fans may not know, but Canadians tend to play offensive line in the CFL. And, you know, by the time you get in the middle of the year, you got some backups there that are not that seasoned. So, you know, beating a guy off the edge might not be that tough when you see it on film. You don't know the quality of the offensive linemen." But that was one of the things this guy had said, was like that doubt got erased, you know, at his workout. And the other thing that really I remember about Cam Wake is in his second season, and I'll have to think what year that was, he did not win the league's most outstanding player. Anthony Calvillo did, who was the quarterback of the Montreal Alouettes. And at that time, a defensive player had never won most outstanding player. It's happened since. Solomon Elamimian won it with the BC Lions just a couple of years ago. He became the first. And not to take anything away from Solomon, but he shouldn't have been the first. The first should have been Cam Wake. And I remember talking to a general manager, you know, about, I don't know how we got talking about who was the outstanding player in the league. And he just stopped me cold. And he said, "Dave, Cam Wake is the best football player in our league, period." Like he did, like it was like he just wanted to cut off the conversation. Like, what are we talking about here? And of course, the voters, I know the media, obviously, a lot of people think the media shouldn't be voting on awards. They voted Anthony Calvillo as the outstanding player. And not to take anything away from Anthony, but that was a year that Cam Wake was the most dominant player in the Canadian Football League. And, you know, the real question, I remember when he went down there was, you know, he could pass rush, certainly, but could he play the run? Could he take on the other assignments that he would have to in the National Football League? And it was a real joy, you know, for those of us that had the pleasure of covering him, you know, to watch him evolve, because he wasn't a hit right away. Like, he actually developed quite a lot as a Miami Dolphin player. He didn't get there as the finished product, But he always was true to his CFL roots. You know, he always represented the league well. And, you know, I think there's, you know, on the list of play, I did a, we did a top 10 show one day on TSN that I, every once in a while I get ideas, like, you know, in the middle of the night, you just get an idea. And I said, oh my goodness, I got an idea for a show, a top 10 show. Top 10 players who were great in both leagues, not guys who played in both leagues. So you can't have had, you know, been a marginal player in one league and a really good player in the CFL, or a marginal player in the CFL and then go on and have a great NFL career. You got to be great in both leagues. And I can't remember where we put Cam Wake on that list. I mean, the list had, you know, Warren Moon on it, Jeff Garcia and Doug Flutie and a few, and Rocket Ismail and a few others. But I seem to think Cam Wake was very high on that list because he was as dominant as you could possibly be in a short term in the Canadian Football League. And then, you know, I don't know where sacks ranks as a valued asset of an NFL player, but it's pretty high. And the fact that he not only did that, but did that for such a long time. And, you know, it's not like he got to the NFL at an advanced age, but he also didn't show up as a 21-year-old, 22-year-old, like a lot of guys do, right? So when you see the way he played the game and how long he played the game, you know, it was I don't know Cam Wake, and I, you know, I obviously interacted with him when he played, but I remember being at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We were doing my show down there for their 50th anniversary. And, we were still broadcasting when they closed it to the public, and it was the Dolphins and the Cowboys that were there, and they were getting their private time to walk around the hall, and no one kicked us out. So we walked around, and I did have a chance to say hi to him and congratulate him on the success of the NFL right in the midst of, you know, the bus of the greatest that ever played the game.
You know, when you look at kind of the body of work, take me back to the time where he got signed. Was he someone that was being talked about around the CFL? Were other teams looking at him? Because, you know, at the time he was undrafted, he tried to get in with the New York Giants, and then he was just kind of middling around for about a year and a half before coming up to the CFL. Was this just kind of an under the radar move that turned out to be, you know, one of the greatest defensive players maybe in league history, even though it was only 2 years?
Yeah, it was, there was no buzz about him until he started playing. And like, that's typical in the CFL. I was actually talking about this on a radio interview earlier today. In all my years covering this league, I have never found a way to look at a guy's resume, watch his film, and predict what kind of CFL player he's going. And I think the reason for that is this. Look, every player that plays college football wants to play in the National Football League. That's unquestionable, right? And not for some of them, it doesn't happen. And then they have to decide whether to retire or whether they want to go play in this other league in Canada. And the part that's really tough to judge is what's his desire? What's his heart? What kind of shape is he in? What's his mentality? Does he think he's come to a lesser league? So, you know, you see all kinds of guys that will like knock your socks off on film. Or if you read what they did in college, and they come up here and like 6 days later, there's a, you know, the team will cut seven guys and there's that guy's name in the middle of it. And, you know, we never hear from him again. It's very, very difficult to anticipate and predict what kind of success guys are going to have in this league. The difference in the game is part of it. But more than anything, I think it's those sort of human intangibles that you either show up with them or you don't. And you can be a great player physically, but if you don't have all those kind of those qualities, you know, your stay here is going to be very short. So it really, Cam Wake's resume was identical to so many guys who come to this league, right? A guy who played at a big time school, Penn State, didn't get drafted, was, you know, in at least one camp with the Giants, and, you know, could have been signed by any of the other 31 teams. And whether it was depth of the position for the Giants or lack of opportunity, or whether it's actually one of the great mysteries about how a guy could be that good an NFL player, you know, and not be able to make a team. And there have been others. Like I know there was a GM in the league that told me on at least two occasions he thought James Harrison was coming to the CFL. You know, James Harrison would end up winning Defensive Player of the Year and became, you know, had a long and illustrious career. So football is one of those sports where I think sometimes it's a bit of a cliche. We say this about all sports, but I really believe it in football, is the opportunity you get and what you're asked to do and who's playing around you can make you look very, very different in one situation than another. And the one thing about the CFL that I think a lot of players appreciate, and this may apply to Cam Wake in some ways, it is more of a players league than a coaches league. Like if you've got, you know, a skill set, there's a little more room to freelance and do your thing, you know? And that's true at all positions, maybe at quarterback more than any other, because it's the most heavily coached position. But I think it's true across the board as well. So Cam Wake is a bit of a mystery, right? And of course, he changed his name along the way too, right? Because he was Derek in college. And then he comes here and he's Cam. Cam was a much better player than Derek. Oh, we can't explain that.
Yeah, and when you look at kind of this body of work in the CFL, that two seasons, you know, 39 sacks, and, you know, being in contention for most outstanding player, but winning defensive player of the year, rookie of the year, how would you stack up those 2 years with other great defensive players in recent league history, maybe over the last 30 years?
You know, it's funny. When people evaluate greatness, they have different standards for it. And, for instance, some people consider longevity, you know, that one of the greatest standards for greatness. And you see this debate comes up a lot of times when we talk about Halls of Fame, right? Hey, this guy played 22 years. And I mean, I say, yeah, but was he ever the best player in the league at his position? And if he wasn't, he's not a Hall of Famer, right? And there's a line that that Dan Shulman, the baseball broadcaster, uses, a basketball broadcaster, that we used to have him on my show at certain times. The line he uses, when you see a Hall of Famer, you know it, right? It's just one of those things. And I would say that, like, Cam Wake was special, right? And even though he only did it for 2 years, I think Cam Wake should be the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. I think he's that good. I think we have to be realistic, right? Why did he leave the Canadian Football League? Well, because he got a better opportunity in the NFL. And while we can't project what he would have done in the CFL, I think it does speak to his greatness that he went to the NFL and became one of the elite sack masters, you know, of his generation. And if anything, I'm not saying we should evaluate that, but it certainly reinforces what we saw him do in Canada. You know, I'm trying to think now. See, if you look at positions where guys get opportunities that go to the National Football League, there aren't that many guys that I can think of that have become, you know, elite sack guys, you know, every down guys on the defensive line. You know, and thinking of I'm trying to think of other great defensive players in the league, you know, of recent vintage. There hasn't really been one that had the sort of outstanding physical qualities that Cam Wake had. That really, so now there, you know, there have been guys that have fallen through the cracks and come here and gone down there and played and stayed and certainly had opportunities. But the list of guys that have become real star players like Cam Wake had, that they don't go down and just hold a job in the NFL. That they become star players, they become names, they become jersey sellers. It's a pretty small list, right? Because for all the time we spend talking about the mistakes the NFL makes or the guys they miss, they don't miss that many. You know, they don't miss that many special guys. They're the best in the world at what they do. They got huge organizations that evaluate players. And we all, you know, we focus on the guys they miss. You know, Tom Brady went to the sixth round, right? And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We can find all kinds of them because you're just dealing with so many players. But, you know, there are very few that have had the kind of impact that he's had. And I think that's a position where, you know, getting to the quarterback is so highly treasured and evaluated that, you know, most of the good ones are down there right away. I can't think of a guy who's come down and had really any similar degree of success at that particular skill the way Cam Wake did.
Now a word from our sponsor. The Olympics, Euros, baseball, major championships, and concerts are all in this summer. And you know what isn't? A wild and hairy bush. Tame your pubes with help from our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Their fourth generation performance package includes the brand new Lawnmower 4.0. If an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat your pubes like Olympic gold? Fellas, do right by your balls and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk. The world is starting to open, and the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped is here to help you get ready. Inside, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker, ear and nose hair trimmer, crop preserver, ball deodorant, crop reviver toner, plus two free gifts, performance boxer briefs, and the Shed travel bag. Talk about a world-class discount into a post-quarantine world. This package is the perfect package for your package and peak performance in whatever sport you desire. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code DolphinsTalk at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped. And you brought up, you know, there isn't this long list of guys who went to one league, dominated, went to the NFL and became, you know, Pro Bowlers, top jersey guys, potential Hall of Famers. When you look at the CFL right now, are there any guys in the league that you could see making the jump to the NFL and having a success like a Cam Wake, like a Doug Flutie, like a Warren Moon? Or maybe it's just there just isn't anybody right now in that kind of mix.
I don't think there is, and here's part of it why, is because the CFL, because they didn't play last year, you know, they allowed guys to go down there last summer. Mm-hmm. And so almost anybody who was under contract that was good enough, they gave a window when their season got canceled. And that was the second time, because you get to the end of the 2019 season, you have a flight of guys to go down there, right? Then 6 months later, you open the gate again, and a few more guys trickle down. Well, we haven't played football since. So you've had sort of two windows, you know, of opportunities for guys to go down there. And look, most of the guys that go down there don't go down there. I don't say all, but most of them don't go down there for their athleticism. For most of them, it's their size, right? It's mostly, you know, that's where you get a lot of offensive linemen, you know, in maybe an interior defensive lineman like Tom Johnson, who played with New Orleans for a long time, was a CFL guy. Brett Jones, you know, played in Calgary. So a lot of them, it's the physical skill. The other thing about guys going from the CFL to the NFL, and I've been writing about this for 30 years, and I have a pretty good handle on what gets you there, okay? Here's what it is. It's not the best players. You give me the best players in any given season in the Canadian Football League, top 25, probably 20 to 22 of them aren't going to get a shot at the NFL. People say, well, why is that? Because playing great in the CFL is not necessarily what gets you to the National Football League. Here's what gets you there. Age, okay? Athleticism, those are the first two. You know, if you are and Cam Wake would have been here as a 23, 24 year old, right? So he was a young player who was freakishly athletic. And then he had the stats and the performance to back it up. But I've seen teams where, you know, a guy gets signed in the NFL and didn't do that much in Canada, but he tests really, really well and he's 23, right? And the whole thing of scouting is not necessarily identifying who the best players are. You and I can tell who the best players are. Scouting is projecting who the best players are going to be in 3 or 4 or 5 years. That's scouting, right? And that's what I am not trained to do. I can tell who the best players are, but I can't project. I'm not that's the hard part. So, you know, there are players absolutely in this league that year in, year out, I think are good enough to play in the National Football League, but they're 28. And if you think about it, they're not going to go to a camp at 29, right? Back up at 30 and get their opportunity to start at 31. Because we know what happens to guys whose ages start with 30 in the national football. They're already trying to replace them, right? So that's the real kind of dilemma that there are, and you know, it's kind of, it's a bit of a subtlety, but when you, I hope people understand it when I explain it that way, is when you say, well, what do you mean the best players? It's not a call-up league, right? You know, there's no midseason call-ups. You've got to be at the end of a season. And so a lot of that really has to do, like, I think Bo Levi Mitchell, you ask me what player could play in the NFL. I think Bo Levi Mitchell could play in the NFL. Now, just even sometimes here, even with the gap in salaries between the economics of the CFL and the NFL, which are massive, right? The NFL salary caps can be over $200 million US this year, and the CFL's is five. So you say, well, how could there be an economic issue? How could a player turn down an NFL opportunity over money when you're talking about a league with a $200 million salary cap and one with a $5 million salary cap? Okay, I'm going to try and walk through that. So Bo Levi Mitchell, 2 years ago, after the 2018 season, was a free agent. He was 28 years old. Okay, so for a quarterback, not too old, not too young, right in that prime area. That's the one area where you can still go to the NFL. Like Doug Flutie went the second time at like 34, right? So Jeff Garcia goes down there and he works out for, he gets offered deals by Denver, Indianapolis, and the Vikings. Three NFL teams offer him contracts. Now, the conversations with some of those NFL teams were not about how he was going to help them win. They were about how he was going to help their starter prepare. So first thing, that puts him off, right? Like, wait a minute. My job is to start help. Well, that's going to put him off. But then the economics of it. Okay, if you are a CFL player who'd never been to an NFL camp, you never signed an NFL contract, okay? Your signing bonus money comes out of the rookie pool. So whatever they give to you is going to shrink what they can give the free agent rookies that they sign after the seventh round every year. And I forget what the number is in that pool, but relative to the NFL salary cap, it's tiny. So if you're going to pay him $50,000, $75,000, $100,000 to come to sign with your team, that's going to have a huge impact and like a massive impact. Because again, the number for free agent rookies is very small. It's like somewhere between 100 and 200,000, I think. So if you're going to pay a guy, so he can't get money up front. If he'd been in an NFL camp and then come to the CFL, he's no longer part of the rookie pool. You could pay him a signing bonus that wouldn't, you know, affect your operations. That, but in Bo Levi Mitchell's case, he didn't. So he goes down there. He's going to get no signing bonus. Then you go and he looks at it and says he's got a contract for $700,000. Okay, for that 2019 season. If he goes to the NFL and goes through training camp and goes through preseason and gets cut on September the 4th, it's going to cost him $350,000 because that's half the CFL season, right? So he's looking at it saying, okay, I've been offered contracts by three teams. None of them actually sound like they think I'm going to play. And if I go down and I got no guaranteed money, and if I get cut on Labor Day weekend, I'm coming back to Canada for half a season and it just cost me $350,000 to try it for the NFL. No thanks. I'm going to the stamps for 700 grand, right? Now, there are players that have taken that opportunity without a signing bonus or minimal signing bonus and turned it in. Alex Singleton's the other one, right? When Singleton was here, the linebacker with the Eagles, Alex Singleton was just one of those guys who jumped out right away again, right? And again, undrafted guy, like a 1AA school, right? I think Montana State, did the practice roster thing in Seattle, like when their defense was really good and never got on the field, had been in a few other places, but he was just a guy who, it's a cliche, but everywhere the ball was, he was there. Like, he's a tackling machine. Now, a little bit undersized, right? But freakishly athletic and just quick to the ball all over the field. And, you know, he became a really good NFL player last year. And, you know, that's one of the things I, but Singleton had the youth on his side too, right? Came here very young. He's in his mid-20s. If you can play in the CFL, if you're an exceptional player, and I would put Alex Singleton on the list, probably since Cam Wake, the most instantly impactful defensive player I've seen in this league was Alex Singleton, like from day one. If you're an exceptional player in this league, generally you can play down there. That's it. But in order to get that opportunity, you got to be exceptional and you got to be young and you got to be freakishly athletic.
The key elements, like you brought up. Before I let you go, today, the day we're recording, it was found out that the CFL and the XFL wouldn't be moving forward with this like so-called partnership, which who knows really what it was going to be. You know, there was all these rumors that, you know, the CFL would become the Continental Football League and it'd be like this weird, like four down CFL hybrid league. But from what you heard, do you know why this couldn't be worked out?
I think there were a lot of logistical issues. I mean, some of them are very obvious, right? What time of year are we playing? Because they play in the spring, CFL, summer, fall. What rules are we playing? You know, different rules, four downs, three downs, et cetera. Field size, even issues we wouldn't think of, that like in the U.S. there's workers' compensation for professional athletes. In Canada, there's not. In the CFL, there's not. The television, like what is the value to a U.S. television network that have nine markets in Canada where they're not drawing revenue from? What is the value to the Canadian teams? You know, and would they just share revenue? Why would that work out for the? So I think they basically were sitting down with the puzzle pieces and saying, can we put this together from a business perspective? Does this make sense? And I think ultimately the CFL couldn't get to the point where there were all kinds of things they couldn't figure out. The XFL wanted an answer. I mean, at one time they were planning to play in 2022. Yeah. This has now pushed them back to 2023. And the CFL's focus is obviously on its return to play. I think this was born a little bit out of desperation. The league doesn't like to admit that. I think the CFL feels a little more confident about its overall business now than maybe they did 6 months ago, with single game wagering being passed in Canada, with some of the, you know, reforms they've done to their business model. I don't know whether they should be completely confident about that going into the future, but they've confident enough to not risk, you know, all the things. And unquestionably, like, I was very interested in the XFL possibility. I do think there are some like core issues the CFL has to find a way around: the demographics of its fans, the loss of market share in the big cities and all those kinds of things. I do think that doing the same old is not necessarily the way to the future. But so I was certainly bullish on them exploring this, but without knowing much detail. You know, we've been hearing it had been trending this way for a little while. There's just, I think one of the difficulties also was if the XFL was up and running already and you were actually looking at merging two leagues, that would be one thing. But you were looking at merging a league in that's been around for a long time with a league that's right now not playing and isn't even owned by the people who owned it the last time they were playing, right? So I think part of it, and look, maybe this comes around again. And I think, you know, there is an idea that, hey, you know what, we need to focus on getting back to playing again. And the XFL needs to focus on getting back on the field, getting its league resurrected. And who knows? Maybe not. You know what? It's like a boyfriend and girlfriend who break up and say, I don't hate you, you don't hate me, but it really doesn't work for us right now. Maybe down the road, who knows? We'll get together again sometime. I think that's kind of what this is like. I don't think that's going to happen in January. And anybody who could predict, you know, what the sports entertainment environment is going to be like over the next, you know, 2 to 4 years, I think is guessing, because we've got so many things that I think we haven't even can appreciate the fallout from what we've all been through the last year and a half and how that's going to affect habits and how it's going to affect sports and all those things. So it was an interesting, I think there were some teams in the CFL that were very, very, very interested in doing this. And I think there were some that were dead set against it. And it's hard, you know, in a 9-team league, when you have that kind of division, if you don't really have everybody on board. So ultimately, the CFL is going to play on August 5th, 2021. The XFL is going to play in, you know, February or March in 2023. Somewhere in between that, the USFL is going to kick off. And,
can you understand why there is this need for spring football? Because the double AF, or what was that, the American Alliance Football, and then the USFL coming back and the XFL is coming back in a couple of years. Why is there this big push over the last few years to bring back spring football?
Well, it goes way back. I remember when I was my first year in this business in 1991, I got a brochure sent to me for something called the Professional Spring Football League, okay, that was supposed to play its red, white, and blue bowl at RFK Stadium in June of 1992. Now, the fact that you've never heard of this league and you're a pretty big football fan probably tells you how many games they play. But, you know, Jim Popp, who was, you know, one of the most successful general managers in the CFL, the general manager in Montreal for 2 decades, he was the director of personnel for that league. And there was a CFL GM at the time who was down there scouting their camp. And when he left, he said, you know, Jim was like 25 years old. He said, kid, if something happens to this league and they never play, I could probably get you a job in Canada. And he gave him his card. Sure enough, the league folded. Jim Popp got a job in Canada and had a, you know, 25-year career. But back to your question, why does it happen? Here's why it happens. People look at the business success and the appeal of the National Football League, and they think, I just need a piece of that. I don't need to be the NFL. I just need to have some sort of – and, you know, college. The number one sport in America is football. Number two sport in America is college football. So somewhere between there's got to be a niche, okay? You got a time of year when no football is being played, right? And here's the kicker. You have a large body of really talented football players that will play for very little. I mean, in the case of the Spring League, we found out how little, like they actually pay to play, right? So it's basically markets that can't get into the NFL, the appeal of football and television, and the cheap labor source of football players that are available to work for very little. As long as those three things exist, you will always see spring football being attempted by somebody. Now, every time one comes along, I always ask myself, okay, what's different about this one, right? Like the AAF kind of had tried to have guys like geographically located to where they went to college, right? So there'd be a natural affinity. You know, the XFL's tinkered with its rules, and going back further, they had kind of, you know, the wrestling thing going on. The one thing that may be a bit of a game changer in this sense is the legalized betting, that you're going to be able to promote your league as that. People love to bet on football. And I think, you know, that's, you're looking at it and saying, well, they can't bet on football between the Super Bowl and Labor Day, so we're going to give them something to bet on. And whether that's enough to engage fans, I mean, people, you know, associated with the XFL certainly look at their second time around, that their television ratings you know, while they were declining week over week, which kind of is a concern because at some point you got to ascend, not decline over the course of your season. If you put them up against other, you know, major sports properties, they weren't terrible, you know? So that almost kind of whet the appetite a little bit more, but it's really been, I mean, you know, I guess the XFL was the first one that really got to it, but there were some false starts before the XFL in 2001 ever got off the ground. So I just think it's the perfect marriage of vacant markets, appeal of football and television, and players willing to work for very, very little money. And there you get spring football.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show and talk to me today and just dropping your wealth of knowledge.
Well, hey, man, as you can probably tell, I enjoy talking football anytime, any place, anywhere.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care.